This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital interest to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may dwell upon the earth. So good to be with you, but so I come today to you with a lot of trepidation and a lot of sorrow in my heart. Not just for some of the property damage that I've faced from New Orleans. In fact, my family home as a young boy is under about 10 feet of water right now in Orleans. But I feel even more of a sadness for really a magnificent old city, which was a great example of European architecture and culture. Many people said that New Orleans was, in fact, the most European-like of American cities. It had a European flavor. We've had coffee houses in our city. That's a common phenomenon now in America. But in New Orleans, we had coffee shops operating literally continuously for over 200 years in the same location. In fact, it's probably the most famous city in the world for coffee, because so much of the South American coffee and blends come up through the harbor, the port of New Orleans. And in fact, they say that with the coffee on the docks of Orleans now stranded, that coffee prices will go up, not only in the United States, but around the world, because they are estimating that about 12% of the entire stock of coffee in the world is in New Orleans right now in warehouses. But New Orleans was a city that I grew up in and I loved. The old streetcar, St. Charles Avenue with fantastically beautiful oak trees, what we call live oak trees. Many times their diameter was 10 feet across. It's just incredible. The circumference, some of these trees was 20 feet. Beautiful shaped branches and full leaves. And, of course, all of them were draped with a beautiful facade of moss. New Orleans had, in fact, the oldest repository of antebellum and old homes of any city in America, because New Orleans for a while did not experience much growth, whereas many other cities such as Atlanta, Houston, Indianapolis, even Chicago, New York, Boston, had a lot of what they call urban renewal, where they tore down the old houses and built modern housing projects and other sorts of creations, which of course now are now trash on the American landscape. But New Orleans didn't, and New Orleans preserved an incredible area. And I understand that most of that area called Uptown New Orleans, or the Garden District, is not actually underwater. In fact, it's pretty dry. There is some wind damage. But at some point when the city opens again, probably in a few months, and you're able to visit the city again, you can go for miles and you can see house after house after house that would qualify almost as a museum in any other city of the United States of America. But you just have thousands of them. Beautiful woodwork. That's when people build houses to last, with a great deal of craftsmanship and pride and love and creation. Of course, now we've come into this more commercial type society where we just try to get the most money out of a place in the shortest period of time. A lot of shortcuts are there, and the houses simply are just not built like they used to be built. But that treasure hopefully is still there in New Orleans. But now the city is being absolutely torn with rioting, murder, mayhem, and even rape, ladies and gentlemen, even rape on a massive scale. We have a great number of National Guardsmen coming into New Orleans. We didn't have enough of them in Louisiana because, well, you know why, because they were in this war for Israel in Iraq, getting their legs shot off and eyes blinded and back broken and and being crippled for what? For American interests? No. Because they were there to fight weapons of mass destruction? Obviously, no. But they should have been here. That's what the National Guard is for, to meet these kinds of emergencies, and they weren't here. And a lot of things happened because of that. Also, the war has taken a tremendous toll of the treasure of the United States of America, $300 billion so far. And that's one reason why the Corps of Engineers and the authorities here didn't have quite enough money to shore up these levees the way they were supposed to have been shorn up. The money has been tight, obviously, on the federal level, very, very tight in these areas. Also, we learned, and I've been watching the news reports over the internet, and I've even been watching the local television station in New Orleans, WWL. And I discovered that the major levee breach, the breach which really cost me the existence of my family home, will happen completely by incompetence. Well, what do you expect from the administration, the affirmative action style administration you have in the city of New Orleans? In fact, the mayor himself said, well, there's too many chiefs and not enough Indians, and for somehow this area was not shored up like it was supposed to have been shored up, and it fell through the cracks. And so this one area, probably just 100 meters wide, flooded some of the most beautiful areas in New Orleans. In fact, it flooded the whitest area, the most European-American area of New Orleans, kind of a holdout area called Lakeview and Lakeshore. And that gives me a pause for worry as well, because as these homes are destroyed and rebuilt and a lot of people will be moving away, who is going to be coming into those homes? Is this also going to transform itself like the rest of New Orleans? Look, I'm not against there being black sections in New Orleans and having sections reflect the black personality, the black culture, the black values, whatever that may be. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I like the fact that there are some parts in New Orleans that still have a reflection of our culture, areas where you can still walk fairly safely in your neighborhoods. And it's a very small area of New Orleans, and this area now is going to be threatened as well. I have some insurance on the property, and a big mortgage. In fact, I mortgaged it and used the money for the cause, really, but over time. But I have a big mortgage, and no rent money now coming in because the house was rented to friends, patriots, in fact. And I don't think insurance is going to cover the loss, but that's just one of the losses. The home and the office I have in Mandeville and Covington, Louisiana, they've endured some pretty severe damage, and it's just going to be a difficult time. Money is always slim. We don't have any big Jewish foundations backing us up like the liberal organizations. But even more important than property, property can be replaced. Well, some property can't, and some art can't, and the bombings of Europe in the Second World War were such a terrible atrocity, which didn't need to happen. But there is now just an incredible loss of life in the city of New Orleans. And I don't believe that most of the people will die in New Orleans from the effects of the storm. I think most are going to die, and most probably even right now have been killed by rampaging African Americans who are acting as if they were in war-torn Uganda or Rwanda rather than the United States of America. And this is a very serious situation, ladies and gentlemen. It's almost like a nightmare scenario. I'm going to give you in a verbal form, the article that I wrote earlier today. And I've already gotten tremendous response from this article from all over the United States of America. Many people have already told me, Raymond, for instance, on stormfront.org, the town hall section. By the way, you can send me your questions, your comments, your thoughts to stormfront.org, the town hall section. Or, in fact, you can send me an email. And the email address now, it's a change, so if you have it in your notebook, in your address book, in your email program, it's info2@davidduke.com. That's info2@davidduke.com. And I'll be happy to try to get to some of those questions, comments, or thoughts during this program. This is truly interactive radio. Well, here's what I wrote this morning. Hopefully, I can read this to you in a passionate way, and we can save this for our archives, because I really believe that the power of the spoken word is even more powerful than the written word, because the spoken word brings out the inner spirit, the passion, the soul of not only the speaker, but also the people who listen. The name of the article is New Orleans Descends into Africa-like Savagery. Roving gangs of African Americans raid nursing homes for the elderly and even children's hospitals. An urgent and rushed article from David Duke. Most people have seen videos depicting the brutality and inhumanity of the African tribal uprisings and lawlessness. Now, you don't have to watch a video shot in Africa. Just look at the many videos from an historic and once beautiful American city, the city of New Orleans. Some people react to catastrophe with a sense of responsibility, giving, and sacrifice. Others react in a way that more resembles rampaging wild animals rather than humankind. The New Orleans looting, robbery, rape, and murder and mayhem is not about food and water. That's a misnomer by the press. There are many distribution points, and absolutely no one is starving. No one is dying of thirst, save perhaps for a few hopelessly trapped in their attics from the risen waters. No. This mayhem is about the morals in a man, not the amount of food that's in his stomach. Thieves are rampaging through stores stealing TVs. They can't watch without electricity, clothes they won't wear, jewelry that they certainly don't need to have to survive. One African American was stopped by a TV news reporter. Carrying an armful of new designer jeans, he was asked by the reporter if he was trying to save the inventory of a store. With a big, toothy grin, the looter replied, quote, "This store be everybody's now," unquote. You can watch the videos all over the web of hundreds, even thousands of African Americans looting homes, shops, and even nursing homes and healthcare providers, and being proud enough of their exploits to smile and to wave for the cameras. The news reports from this morning on the WWL TV website report that in their quest to loot, gangs of rampaging Negroes even raided a nursing home full of sick and infirmed elderly. Here's a direct quote from the article, and the article is entitled, "Governor Declares Martial Law to Crack Down on Looters," from WWL TV, and that's this morning. Managers at a nursing home were prepared to cope with the power outage and had enough food for days, but then the looting began. The Covenant Homes bus driver surrendered the vehicle to carjackers after being threatened. Bands of people drove by the nursing home, shouting to residents, "Get out!" On Wednesday, 80 residents, most of them in wheelchairs, were evacuated to other nursing homes in the state. Quote, "We had enough food for 10 days," said Peggy Hoffman, the home's executive director. "Now we'll have to equip our department heads with guns and teach them how to shoot." Amen. And where do those people who promote gun control, where do they come off now when you have these kind of incidents in society? And any society could have a disaster, whether it be a fire or an earthquake or a tidal wave or hurricane. And they're telling people now, law-abiding people, you can't have a gun, and they're trying to restrict ownership every day. Now, how much lower can someone called human go? Bands of people driving by a nursing home full of sick and infirmed elderly and screaming, "Get out!" And as I said, these criminals were in cars and could have easily driven to many National Guard units, as many policemen, and would have certainly been well fed and watered if need be. No, they wanted to go into the nursing home and steal the personal belongings and cash of the helpless residents and snatch some of those drugs that may have been there. Again, this is no isolated robbery. It was carloads of African Americans terrorizing the sick and elderly people who were already greatly suffering from the effects of this monster storm. Now, here's a story of massive numbers of Negro criminals raiding a children's hospital. You got it. That's what I said, and here's the story. This is actually from the AP. New Orleans, a top Homeland Security official in New Orleans, said bands of gunmen are roaming through New Orleans. Terry Ebbett said looters have been breaking into stores all over to steal guns. The Times-Picayune newspaper reported the gun section at a new Walmart had been cleaned out, and the thieves are apparently using their new guns with shots heard through the night. Guns aren't the only things drawing the thieves. People commandeered a forklift on high ground to lift storm shutters and break the glass of a Rite Aid pharmacy. A crowd stormed the store, carrying ice, water, and food. A crowd, ladies and gentlemen. A spokesman for Louisiana's governor said workers at Children's Hospital huddled with sick kids and waited for help to arrive as looters tried to break in. Help never arrived. A city councilman said, the French Quarter has been attacked. She said, exhausted, scarce police have to be diverted from search and rescue to try to control the looters. Now, ladies and gentlemen, one must ask this question. Is this a story about tribal brutality in Rwanda or Uganda? The raiding by bandits of a children's hospital, for God's sakes? No. It's happening in one of the most beautiful and historic American cities. And my dear friends, it is only a foretaste of what's ahead for the multicultural America of the future. In absolute contrast, in the overwhelmingly European communities that have suffered devastating wind and tidal surge damage, where the eye of the storm came ashore in Mississippi, there's been nothing remotely resembling this anarchy and inhumanity of mostly African-American New Orleans. As one police officer in the devastated European-American community of Bay St. Louis said, quote, never have I seen such selflessness, courage, and community spirit than is displayed by these residents. In these kind of communities, ladies and gentlemen, which have absolute, almost total devastation, I mean, homes clear to its foundation, these people there, they would not allow an individual to rob or rape or murder because the other people would stop them. But this is not happening in the city of New Orleans. I recently reached by telephone a police officer, a friend of mine, in my home city of Mandeville, a community that has had a tremendous wind and water damage. No electricity, no phone service, no alarms functioning, etc. He told me that there have been almost no incidents of looting or robbery of any kind. Mandeville is about 96% white. And by the way, to show you how strong the wind was, I got a tree right in the middle of my home, and three huge trees, I'm talking about huge diameters, old, old pine trees that have been there for generations that reach up, you know, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 feet, incredible trees. Three have fallen on one of our properties. And I've already got some offers of people to come in and help us to try to repair the property, and I appreciate that. And it's going to be tough. I mean, the post office is out, the phones are out, the electricity is supposed to be out for weeks. It's just a terrible, terrible situation. Your letters, I think, can still get to us because they certainly will be delivering mail. They won't be lost. However, letters that you might have sent earlier may be lost. So if you send us a note or a contribution or an order, it would be a big help to us if you'd repeat it. We need your help right now financially. Financially, we've never made any real profit. We've always just barely survived. As I said, we have no foundation support, and we appreciate your help. Now, the egalitarians and the multiculturalists will tell us that there's no intrinsic differences in behavior between races and human population groups. Tell that to the European American minority who's still stranded in parts of New Orleans and who are prepared to guard their wives and daughters from the rampaging black mobs with their lives if need be. Ladies and gentlemen, differences do exist. And these differences can be seen consistently across racial lines around the world. Take, for instance, Japan. Japan suffered a series of devastating earthquakes, and yet the Japanese people and the communities that suffered this loss pulled together, rooted by their common heritage, culture, and racial unity. They helped each other, and they got through it. There was no anarchy, no bands of simian-like Japanese in cars trying to raid nursing homes and children's hospitals. I'm reminded of the Northwest Airlines plane crash in Detroit in 1987. I wrote about that extensively in those years, where the denizens of the ghetto descended on the carnage and stripped the still smoldering body parts of watches, wallets, jewelry, and other personal possessions. It seems that 99% of decent human beings would react to such carnage with horror and trauma and try to find survivors. Only a baby survived that terrible crash. But no, not these creatures who, in the midst of this enormous human tragedy and with a mentality that's completely alien to European and many other peoples, exhibited such reprehensible behavior. Ladies and gentlemen, here we have a situation in New Orleans, dead bodies floating, massive loss of family, homes, and possessions. Does anybody out there listening, do you have any idea what it's like, the thought of losing all the possessions you've had in your life, your pictures of your wedding, your childhood pictures, your birth certificates, your christening certificates, your personal papers, your letters from your loved ones, your parents, or your wife, or your sister, all the mementos that you've collected in your life, the books that you've collected in your life. It's just an incredible thought to lose those things. In the midst of this suffering, here are these individuals acting like acting like they're not human. Please understand, I'm not saying that all African Americans behave this way, but I do say there is a quantitative and qualitative difference in behaviors among the general populations of Europeans and Afro-Americans. Now, these differences exist no matter what the political or social structure of the communities are in which they live. Similar behaviors can be found among different races in London, in Paris, in Rio, and countless other communities around the world. The overwhelmingly dark ghettos of Rio de Janeiro, for instance, have an astounding murder rate of 6,000 victims per year. That was higher than the rate of death in the Vietnam War. And the once beautiful and safe city of Johannesburg, South Africa, when administered by Europeans, it was safe, I should say, is now the crime capital of the earth. Johannesburg, South Africa. And today there's a huge genocide, a terrible genocide going on against white farmers and many others. Are we European Americans hateful because we don't want our communities to reflect the standards of New Orleans right now, at this instant? Because we don't want our daughters raped in the midst of a crisis and a catastrophe? Because we don't want our parents terrorized in nursing homes and in hospitals? Because we who suffer loss of home and property and jobs and even the loss of loved ones from a natural disaster don't want such terrible losses to be compounded by robbery, rape, assault, and murder? Those are the blessings of multiculturalism, the so-called enrichment for which we are supposed to be so thankful. The blessings upon us offered by the media and government establishment which engineered this catastrophe of our communities and our civilization. One more note, a number of news articles have stated that there are not enough Louisiana National Guard troops to assist the residents to stop the looting and carnage. In fact, they have to bring them in from other states, from Fort Hood, for instance. Now, why is this, ladies and gentlemen? And the answer is, of course, it is because so many of our Louisiana National Guard troops are being shot and maimed in the war for Israel in Iraq, rather than being at home to provide the needs of our own American families in Louisiana. And one final observation my friends. As you know, Israel has had the chutzpah to ask for about $250,000, tax dollars, our money, to compensate every illegal land-stealing Israeli settler of Gaza. And many American politicians, bribed by AIPAC, are going along with this insane demand. Do you think that these politicians will support with $250,000 every victim of Hurricane Katrina? Those American men and women who committed no theft or crime and who've paid taxes in all their lives and who have suffered from this terrible natural disaster. When are the American and the other European peoples around the world going to wake up to the fact that our very survival is at stake? I will do my part to help wake up our people. How about you? For our heritage and freedom, this has been David Duke. And I make a note here at the bottom. There's never been a story published on DavidDuke.com more important than this one. Please post this story that you'll find on DavidDuke.com and Stormfront.org to every web forum. Send it by email to every friend and family member on your email address list. No story, I think, can more touch and awaken our people than this frightening peek into the future. Post the story, send the story, quote the story, link the story, and let's wake up our people. And I don't think any event, any tragic event, has more power to do that than this. And one afterward, I posted another story right after this one, from a New York Times article by Joseph B. Treister, and it's about the fact that now rape is even beginning to happen in the main refugee centers. It was bound to happen, wasn't it? Right in the Superdome in New Orleans, there are emerging reports of rape. This is where people have had a hard enough time coping with the loss of their homes and their jobs, but now they have a new concern, rape. Women are apparently being raped by the brazen denizens of New Orleans. This is occurring in an area where there are many policemen, National Guard troops, and officials. And you can imagine the horror taking place on the remote streets cut off by water or raging black gangs. How many women will be raped, robbed, and murdered, and their bodies thrown in the waste-filled waters of New Orleans? Only God knows. I do believe the toll from murder and mayhem will far outstrip the deaths caused by this terrible storm. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a disaster movie. This is real life in America right now. Here's a quotation from the New York Times, September 1. Superdome, Haven, quickly becoming an ordeal. That's the title of it by Joseph Treister. Quote, several residents of the heard of children being raped, though it was not clear whether anyone reported such incidents to the authorities, and no officials could be found who confirmed the accounts. This is in the Superdome. Darcel Monroe, 21, a bakery cashier, stammered hysterically as she recounted seeing two young girls being raped in one of the women's bathrooms. A lot of people saw it but were afraid to do anything, she said. Well, let me tell you something. There's a lot of our people that would do something no matter what the cost or what the risk. And maybe that's the difference between, you know, how the European American community reacts and some of these other communities. This thing is getting impossible, ladies and gentlemen. It's just absolutely insane, and this drama is unfolding more and more every day. And this has got to be an object lesson for the European American people. They've got to take notice of what's happening here, and we've got to help them take notice, because this is the future unless we change the direction that our country is going in. We are heading toward an Armageddon. Not in the Middle East necessarily, an Armageddon right here. Our own people, our own heritage, our own traditions, our own freedoms, our own lives. Okay, now here's a couple of emails that just came in. New Orleans, The Sins and DeSavory is a classic. This is from Reichman. He says, thank you so much for writing New Orleans, The Sins and DeSavory. I've already sent it out to hundreds of contacts this morning and anticipating great results. There is magic in thinking big. Thanks for hitting the nail squarely in the head one more time. This is my favorite article since Should Christians Support Israel, which I sent to over 1,000 contacts, including hundreds of pastors and churches across America. By the way, if you haven't read that article, ladies and gentlemen, take a look at it. It's a great article, especially for those Christians who've been duped by these Zionists. These anti-Christian Zionists who have them now supporting anti-Christian Israel, you know, against every value of Christianity. Anyway, while recovering from Katrina seems a daunting task, we as whites of European descent are equipped from on high to meet this challenge. Adversity has always been our clarion call to action. This is likely the single greatest opportunity we've ever had in modern history to awaken the sleeping giant of racial awareness that is genetically buried deep inside every white person, man, woman, and child on earth. Don't miss this one. This may be the last chance we have to arouse the masses from their seemingly perpetual slumber. Seize the day, white man. Carpe diem. Godspeed. And that's from Reichman. You got a lot going on. This is from PC. He says, Dave, do you think it's a good idea to rebuild your home and office there? Take this as an opportunity to leave the African-American infested South once and for all. Well, sir, you know, I'm not going to go that way. You know, I do travel the world. I see it as a worldwide fight. I am not a person to give up our ground, to give up our ancestry. I don't believe in that. I think that the fact that we've been on the run for so long is the reason why we're in this terrible condition to begin with. So I'm not planning to leave. And the area that I live in, by the way, is, as I said earlier, is extremely European American. It's very safe. It's a great place for people to live from anywhere in the United States. I know it's better than probably 95% of the other communities around the country. It is clean. It looks like Europe. The roads are clean. The cars are clean. The houses are clean and beautiful. It's got a great climate, and it doesn't even have many illegal alien Mexicans in the community. It's quite amazing. Now it's been devastated, unfortunately, in the North Shore, and the government is talking about moving refugee camps into St. Tammany and other parts of Louisiana. That's just great, isn't it? Now, if that happens, storm refugee camps, if that happens, then I may have to consider what you suggest. We'll have to wait and see what occurs, but who knows how the government can will make this terrible catastrophe into something even worse than it's been already. All right, let's see what we got here. This is this is an interesting one. Let's see. Okay, I got a few things I'm trying to go through and share with you some of the material that's out. This is from Danny, says, David and Associates, my sympathies are with you as you've come off a very harrowing week and face a long and difficult, perhaps equally harrowing near future. Your courage and perseverance are inspiring. I'll keep you in my thoughts and try to use your example as extra motivational fuel for my own modest and fledgling outreach efforts. Best wishes. Well, thank you, and I tell you, I'm also inspired. This whole hurricane story, it's also a tremendous story of heroism from our people, and honor and courage, and so many people have risked their lives to save others. And let me tell you something. I have got a computer right now filled with pictures, and especially when these African Americans, they want affirmative action and they want to always hate white people. I've got a whole file full of pictures of white individuals saving blacks from the floodwaters. It's just incredible. I have one picture of a black family being saved, and there's six white men there out trying to save them. And how do these gangsters that are shooting and killing and robbing and raping, how do they repay them, our people, for these kinds of things? It's just amazing, ladies and gentlemen. And it's sickening what's going on. It's sickening. Okay, let's go to stormfront.org and take a couple of posts, and then we'll go on. We've had a pretty good program today. It's fairly short. There's a lot happening, obviously, in the world. I think that the New Orleans story. It's amazing that this has happened right in the place that I've lived all my life. You'll read a lot about it in My Awakening. If you haven't read My Awakening yet, you know, you can do that. And I think that it'll make this whole area come to life for you. But it's kind of interesting that this event has happened here, and it's going to be so instructive, and it's almost a destiny. It's almost appropriate in a way. I mean, I don't think it's very appropriate or very happy that this has occurred here. But in a way, it's kind of like destiny. It's interesting that the area I grew up in, the area I write about My Awakening, is maybe pivotal in helping to wake up our people. Because I think if the story gets out that our people can truly be awakened. And I think the story is the kind of passionate, interesting, and horrifying story that has the potential to wake up people. This is from Leif Erikson, and he says, it's actually Eric is his name. He says, "Mr. Duke, first of all, that was an excellent article, and your writing combined with the real video millions of people are watching could have indeed awakened hundreds of thousands of white Americans if it was linked, advertised, and promoted with the correct conclusion. However, I have to say that I'm very disappointed that you did not use this opportunity with your persuasive skills and name recognition to advertise what could have been a great new vehicle for our cause and for helping many European Americans. Watching the looting, rioting, and mayhem of the ungrateful blacks, the mostly generous white Americans who normally give everything they can to people in need may not want to donate a penny to any relief fund. I saw footage of some blacks and nearly... there were two nude, blonde-haired, white Barbie dolls hanging from a pole, a grim effigy of how they want to lynch us and what they want from our women first. What if a media-savvy, intelligent, outspoken, and very well-known white activist promoted a whites-only charity relief fund? I suggest this is not for the sole purpose of helping white victims of the hurricane, which is not worthy. It's to unify whites with action and activism and not just words." Well, let me tell you something, Eric. I don't think that will help us win friends and support even among our own people, because I think people feel when people are in need, people are in need. If they had a black-only fund, and I realize the government will do so, then I think that would be very, very appropriate. If it was a black-only type program, then a white-only type program, I think, would be a very legitimate response. And that's one reason why I support the white scholarship program that Stormfront has initiated and Don's initiated. There are many scholarships, of course, limited only to blacks, and many others discriminate against white people. So, you know, I don't, at this point, to say that we just want to have charity only for whites, that really kind of paints us, I don't think, in exactly the right way, even though I appreciate what you're saying and I understand what you're trying to get at. You say a lot more, but I don't know if I can go do the whole article. It's okay. He has some critical things to say here, and I don't mind that he does have that. It's a very long piece. He said, "I asked for help in my house, but I should just ask for, you know, activity in the movement." Well, as you know, I always ask for people to have activity in the movement. It would be nice for people to help us right now in this time of need, because we have suffered a great deal of damage. And let me tell you something. I couldn't do what I do unless I pay the bills, unless, you know, I have a base of operations, unless we have an office. It takes that. And I'm not going to be ashamed of the fact that, you know, or sorry for the fact that I requested people, if they could, if they're able to help us. And I've asked for some volunteers, if they can come down, who know something about carpentry and repair, to come down and help us fix the home and office. That would be a great contribution. I mean, it's no less than what people did in the small towns of America when the barn burned down or some natural disaster struck some family. I need the support. I cannot do what I do without that support. I've traveled the world. The reason that I'm not home right now, able to take care of this, is because I've been out spreading the word as much as I can all over the world, urging people, motivating people to get involved. I just came from Sweden, where, as you know, a bomb was planted against us, and the bomb happened not to go off, but it was a terrorist act. But I was there at Sweden, and I wasn't telling the Swedish people to support me. I was telling the Swedish people to get out there and work and to support their cause and to support their country and support their people, support their heritage. And, you know, so, but I couldn't do that. And I couldn't be waking up these people around the world and getting this book published all over the world and doing radio and television and media all over the world and speaking before conferences and meetings and gatherings and doing press and everything that I do unless I have a base of operations. It's just absolutely essential. Now, the income at our base of operations for the Duke Report and for Euro is so small, you'd be amazed. I mean, most of the people, I think, in any sort of management position these days in industry or business in America have more income, just personally, than we have for putting out the publications, putting out our newsletters, you know, doing the cost and expenses of traveling and speaking and organizing and working. Heck, the international conference, which was so important and which we sponsored here in New Orleans, which I think was so vital in bringing groups together and bringing more cooperation between organizations, this wouldn't have been possible except for the fact that we did it and spent huge amounts of time and effort and money doing it, and I'm still saddled with debt from that international conference. So, you know, you can do whatever you want to do. I mean, if people, you know, want to help me continue to do what I do, I'd appreciate it. But I've never suggested that people don't support other people that are working in the cause. I've never told people they shouldn't support the movement. In fact, I've urged activity, action, and activism in practically every speech that I've ever made. So I don't quite understand, but that's nature. I mean, you know, everybody's not going to say things that everybody agrees with all the time. Overall, Eric, I agree with 99% of what you say and 99% of your posts, and I'm not trying to take you to task here, but I think your criticism there is a little unfounded in this particular case. This is from Jared. He says, Representative Duke, excellent article regarding the mayhem in New Orleans. The chaos occurring there truly underscores racial differences in behavior. It is sickening to watch what is going on there. You would think we were in Somalia again. Of course, liberals go out of their way to excuse the terrible deportment of blacks. They are just in survivor mode. Sarcasm. I heard that talking point about 100 times a day. I wonder how long it will take before the methodical relief efforts are blamed on white racism. That's a good point, Jared. I mean, the media now is saying, oh, these people are hungry. They're starving. They're thirsty. That's why they're committing this violence. That's why they're raping people. That's why they're throwing people out of nursing homes. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, nobody is starving, okay? Let's make it real clear. Nobody is starving in New Orleans. Nobody is going without water. You can take water and you can boil it in a doggone coffee can if you want to, all right? In fact, the gas is on still in most places. Usually gas continues on in a crisis. The gas is still on in most places where electricity is out. You know, you can boil. You can make a little fire and boil coffee. You can boil water. You can drink it. You know, you're not going to die. There are policemen all over the place. There are National Guards who are available that you can go to. There are shelters that have support. You know, nobody is going to starve. That's total and utter bull. I'm not going to use the other part of the word, but you know what? You know the last part of that word. This is from Tearsfire, I think his name is. He says, Representative Duke, I just wanted to reply to the above and comment that, and this is replying to what Eric said earlier, and comment that after all the hard work, willingness to sacrifice, and even risk of your life as you endured in Sweden, it's definitely appropriate in what must be a difficult time for you for that people give a little back to you have given us so much. That's the least people can do for someone who's tirelessly worked on our behalf, and my prayers are with you. Your works have helped numerous people for many years and contribute positively to many lives on a daily basis. So in the coming days, people should be proud to help you and glad to know that they can be of help to you. Your request for help is completely appropriate. And by the way, I didn't make a big, long request for help. I just pointed out that we needed a little assistance. We had some damage. And financially, it's going to be very difficult for right now. Our mail, obviously, has been cut off. I think people can send letters now and reach us. You know, the best way if people do want to help, by the way, if they do want to give us a little hand right now, the best way is to use the web and make a credit card donation, because we can phone in those credit card amounts and put it in the bank account and hopefully pay our bills. The bills, ladies and gentlemen, will still continue month to month in spite of the fact that the income is not. It's a difficult situation. And what we had happen here in Louisiana, similar things could have happened anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, you could have an earthquake, you could have avalanches, you can have tornadoes. It just so happened that this happened where I live and where my family has lived. My daughter lost her car completely. There was, in fact, she didn't have a very nice one, just a used car. But it was all that she had, about a $6,000 car, and the water's over the roof. My good friend, the Farrells, who you might have heard at the conference speaking, the roof was up to the water was up to the roof of their house, apparently, in Kenner. And the Farrells are wonderful people, and my heart goes out to Howie and Gloria, and I'm sure they lost, both of them, a lifetime of possessions and memories in this terrible catastrophe. And it's a saddening, very saddening event for us who are from and live in this area and are suffering in this way. And so it's kind of tough. Ladies and gentlemen, let's see what else we got now. I got a couple more things, and then we're going to go on and finish out. I think we better go. We're over time, and I've got to get this thing archived and uploaded, and the bigger the file, the harder it is to do that, and more time-consuming it is. I know people are anxious to hear this show. There's a lot of people online right now, and a lot of people have not caught the beginning of the program. We have a big audience at this moment, and so I'm going to go ahead and end the program. I will be with you, obviously, tomorrow. I look forward to being with you tomorrow, and we'll talk some more about this whole event and see what else unfolds in the media. And let's continue to promote this. I mean, this article that I quoted from today and that I verbally expressed, you can take that article and you can just absolutely flood the internet with it. You have the ability. If every listener, both live and if you're hearing this thing archived a little later on, if you would just go and spread this article, you could just wake up so many people. And that's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. It is about taking our fight to really first our own people in terms of waking them and motivating them. And the one person that wrote me and said that I do motivate, I do that. And I was reading the last couple of days a few of these poison pen attacks on me with all kinds of outlandish and insane allegations. It could only come, I think, from the mind and heart of a Jewish supremacist, the Jewish extremist, actually. It's that those kind of weird allegations. And I'm thinking, you know, over my years, you know, I've never attacked any other leaders in our movement. I've only had positive things to say about people. You know, I've taken this fight to millions of Americans and given them a good expression of our ideas. You know, I think the two books that I've written, My Awakening and Jewish Supremacism, have certainly been, from what people tell me, or have been the books that are most recommended for new people, very powerful books to educate people and motivate people for our side. I don't think anybody has traveled more for this cause, spoken more for this cause, worked harder for this cause. And it's just difficult sometimes when all these things come down together. I'm willing to put my life on the line, and I'm willing to spend huge amounts of time, and I'm willing to face the slanders of the Jewish extremists who dominate a lot of the media. But it just seems kind of insane that I also have to endure some of the attacks that I have from people who call themselves white nationalists and who try to say they're for the cause. People that sit around in their underwear and write poison pen letters about different leaders in the cause and start talking about how this is cyber activism. Well, let me tell you, my activism's been real. I mean, this year, twice, we've had very, very close calls in terms of our own personal safety in bringing out this cause. In Spain and Barcelona, the communists invaded the very meeting room where I was speaking. I mean, they came in with baseball bats and pipes and 2x4s. They smashed the office, and they were trying to get to me and Pedro Varela, my very gracious host at this meeting. They came to the meeting because I was there. And then, of course, in Sweden, they found the timed explosive devices. Thank God they didn't go off. And ladies and gentlemen, it's like, what are these people who do these poison pen letters? What in the hell have they done for our cause instead of try to undermine people that are doing very hard and good work? You know, it's kind of amazing. Those people that want to attack me, and I've read some of these scurrilous attacks and so forth. Well, let me tell you something. You know, they should write a letter to the ADL and get on their payroll, because they'd be happy to pay them. I'm telling you, they'd be happy to do that. And I'm just a little angry at this moment, because I feel this is a very difficult fight, and when you're really struggling, you know, when you're facing a very difficult fight on all levels, it's kind of tough not to have the complete support of the people who identify themselves as people who are fighting for our race and for our heritage. Thank God I do have a lot of support, and I'm very, very appreciative of all of you who've written me and supported me at this time and really gotten active in this cause. And that's really what I'm asking you to do the most of, and that's just to get out there, recruit people, educate people, motivate people, be an example, and be a success in your life. That's another theme of every speech. Go to my website, davidduke.com, as soon as this program's over, whether you're listening to this live or whether you're listening to this at a later time archived, and listen to my speech in Sweden. It's a typical kind of a speech that I give, where not only am I talking about the problems, but I'm telling the people there, you know, the young men and women there, you know, to make something of their lives, to be successful, to be strong, to be healthy, to stay away from the booze and the drugs, you know, to be an example, and to make this cause their life, and be courageous as our forefathers would want us to be. And I think that I've done that, and I will continue to do that. And no matter what comes, no matter what slanders the Jews are their friends, are the stupidity that exists in this movement, no matter what slanders, no matter what threats they put against me or my loved ones, no matter what financial difficulties I have, whatever, I can promise you, I will continue to fight as long as I have breath in my body. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, and I will see you tomorrow.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.